Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Sports reporters assemble!
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, you heard it. The sports reporters, they have indeed assembled because it is Friday afternoon here in Knoxville, Tennessee. For myself, I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I'm joined, as I am every single Friday, by my good friend, the Daily Beast, Robert Silverman. Bob, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon, Chase. Or should I say Henry?
Okay, that's... You're never going to let this die, are you?
No. Never. We're going to be like 80 years old, and I'll be 103.
I was going to say, the math here is not good for you.
It's okay. We're going to be like sitting outside like in the virtual cafe, you know, in the Matrix, and I'm just going to go...
You're just going to be laughing, Henry. Look at that Henry over there.
Look, we'll be in our pods. We'll be eating the cicadas and the bugs. I'm still going to call you fucking Henry.
Oh, can you explain this to me? And did you call them cicadas and not cicadas?
I did. They should be cicadas.
Okay. I didn't know if there was a different thing. Okay.
I was like, there's another term for
That's what I thought. I was like, is there a New York way of describing these? Do they call them cicadas?
Cicadas. It's mispronounced. But what would you like explained? The mispronunciation or something else?
Something else, because I was walking the dog around the neighborhood the other day, and the girlfriend and I stumbled on a dead cicada, but like it was on its back, but its stomach was all white. Are they all white? Is that a thing when they die? They just go white, like literal white?
And I know this from personal experience because I took a... I took a tennis racket to one of them one time, and I was just like, yeah. Oh, so here's the thing. Me and my cousins were bored. We had tennis rackets and badminton rackets. So, yeah, we went in. They're like white on the inside.
Okay, so that's just how they always are.
Yes.
I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah, it was kind of creepy because I was like, did someone spray paint this cicada? What a weird, weird thing to do. But there you go. There you go. Also here, Andrew Hammond, you just heard him, of the Detroit Free Press. Andrew, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm absolutely fantastic. It is the beginning of college football season. Mm-hmm. I want everybody to get excited. Tennessee is 1-0. Yep. Are you feeling like 98, Chase? Are you feeling like 98?
Joe Milton, Teague, Martin reincarnated? Who says no?
Also
very awkward
Bowling Green might be butt.
They might be. Scott Loeffler, shout out to him. But you know what's funny? They were going into the tunnel at halftime just trolling Tennessee fans, like our section, just like ramping it up, like we're in this bowl. And it's just one of those where I was like, oh, what are you doing? What's happening here? Why are you trolling The Knoxville fans. I don't understand. But no, it was delightful. It was so nice to be back, and I cannot say enough gleeful things. It was just, there's nothing like it. Bob knows, being a New Yorker, he knows the SEC, it just means more, and he knows the experience is very, very, it's just unlike anything else. And it was great. Like, Milton, obviously not very accurate last night, and we'll get on that in Rocky Top Let's Rock after this show. But it was delightful. Smokey's back, which is important. We lost all the mascots, the actual animal mascots, last year for COVID. So it's good to see them all back. That's true, Bob. They were all gone.
Bob, don't laugh. Mm? It's don't not you funny. Dare laugh.
It's not funny. I'm sorry.
We missed them. We missed them, and they're back, and it was great. And Smokey the dog is great, and it was a lot of fun. Tion Evans looking like Alvin Kamara 2.0. I'm all about it. I'm feeling good. What could go wrong in a Tennessee season? And also, just the sound of, it's football time in Tennessee as the kickoff happens. Oh, like, I was just euphoric. Just euphoric. I had high school football last weekend, going again tonight. Like, it's just, what a wonderful time of year. The fall, it feels like fall outside. Do you hear the gleam in my voice, guys? Like, it's
yes,
genuine.
Yes, you're quite happy.
Mm-hmm. I'm happy. Bob,
yeah, what's
new
up
with you? Did you go see some football?
No, I didn't.
How's Max?
I am preparing for my fantasy draft on Monday night.
Okay.
I'm picking third, which is very exciting for me. So I'm looking not to give away my strategy to the rest of my fellow fantasy football enthusiasts who I'm drafting with on Monday. But and they're probably not to insult the scope and reach of this podcast.
Oh.
But a lot of them come from like the disinformation and far right research beat.
Mm. Oh my God, why? Oh, it's from that beat. Sorry. I was yes, kind of freaking out.
Yeah. A lot of people who cover I think shitheads would be a broad enough term to describe their
reportage. That is fair.
It's how I describe it to my significant other, and she hates it. I say I'm on the shithead beat, which covers, I think, pretty much a lot of the reporting I do. In any case, a bunch of those dudes and I are in a fantasy league together, and I'm picking third, and I'm thinking Kamara third.
Ooh,
that's a safe pick. Safe, but it's a, like, if you wanted to get him third and he was there, absolutely.
It's a 0.5 PPR league, just to give everyone some context. So it's either him or Tennessee's own Mr. Henry.
Mm.
I think. I don't have any love for Ezekiel Elliott. I think he's washed.
Oh, there's a drop off coming, absolutely.
Yeah.
I didn't hear why I'm already blanking on our. Oh, we got Wayne Gallman just signed with the Falcons. Mike Davis, the biggest thighs in the NFL. Can't go wrong there.
Those are some impressive meat hooks.
I mean, how are you tackling that? I don't know what you're doing. Would you be able to wrestle Mike Davis to the ground? The high school superstar wrestler, Bob Sibbring. Could you get Mike Davis in the ground?
No!
Mm.
No!
Andrew, could you?
What?
Get Mike Davis on the ground.
No. And no. Do I want to try? No.
Yeah, I don't think it would go well. I don't think I'd even try. Like, I really don't think I would.
I saw somebody tackle him in a preseason game, and it was definitely... It was like, oh, okay. They got him down to the ground, and I'm just like, he's one of those guys in the league, which there are many, that you're like, you know what? I don't want to tackle that guy. Like, I don't want to be in the vicinity if I have to tackle that guy. 1v1. I mean, gang tackle, fine. But, like, 1v1, nope. Mm-mm, I'm good.
Yeah. Well, in positive news for Bob, did you hear what Romo said about Zach Wilson this week, Bob?
No. What did Tony Romo say about my Mormon son?
Is he Mormon?
Yeah.
Yeah, he went to BYU.
I know, so he went to BYU, but that's not a requirement. I didn't know if
he's from Utah.
Mm. Yeah, like, okay. You haven't seen his mom's Twitter page? Jeez.
Well, Andrew, do you know what Tony Romo referred to Zach Wilson as?
Oh, I am very afraid, but let's roll.
His bae? Did he refer to him as his bae? As his...
He has Patrick Mahomes' ability.
You know what? There are parts of that I agree with, because if you saw Zach Wilson at BYU, you would be like, yeah, that checks out. Yeah.
Okay. How do you feel about that, Bob? A little bit of Patrick Mahomes at him?
Real? Is this a new comp?
It's a new comp.
Mahomes?
He watched the preseason tape. A little bit of Mahomes. You feeling better?
I don't see it.
No?
Sorry.
I see it. In terms of like extending plays, the
his arm strength is there too. Like he does. He's wacky.
Platform throws. Mm-hmm. Look at me.
So, yes. But you know what game really kind of sealed it for me? Like when I think of Patrick Mahomes type throws, it was I think it was San Diego State last year. He made some like tremendous throws. The Coastal game when, which I will argue was the game of the year in college football.
It was.
And when Coastal wasn't basically giving him repeated elbow drops, i.e. Eddie Guerrero, he looked absolutely fantastic. So yeah, no, I buy that. I buy what direction Romo was going. We will see it on the field in what 7-8 days. So yeah, let's roll.
Get excited. Be optimistic, Bob. It could be different with Zach Wilson. I think he's the most high upside quarterback y'all have had in my lifetime.
Yeah, that's certainly true.
That's a positive thing. It's exciting.
The Jets quarterback since Joe Namath, the best one was probably 1 year of Vinny Testaverde.
I thought they were going to say Neil O'Donnell.
It's either Vinny or those couple of years when Chad Pennington was healthy.
Goodness.
Bob, I got a question.
Sure.
And you've been around, and I'm not like trying to date you or anything on this, but do you think that there's maybe been this much hype on a Jets QB, rookie QB, since maybe Richard Todd or Ken O'Brien?
People were very excited about Sam Darnold a couple of years ago. They were. Here's the problem with Ken O'Brien. Ken O'Brien was, even when he was drafted, immediately Jets fans were getting mad that they didn't take Marino. And then Marino, of course, was great from the moment he walked onto a field.
But,
so
my favorite thing about the whole Marino Ken O'Brien thing is that pretty much until Ken O'Brien was out the league, he always had Marino's number in those games.
Yeah, he did. Ken O'Brien was a perfectly fine quarterback. If they hadn't passed on Marino, no one would be crapping on good old Cal Davis's Ken O'Brien. The most hype. There was a lot of hype for Pennington. People were very excited when they got Pennington.
I forgot he was drafted by the Jets. For some reason, I kept thinking that he was traded, like as he was drafted, or it was like a draft day trade or something. So my bad on that.
They got him as part, I believe, of the compensation package for John Abraham when they traded him.
That's right. Okay, I think that's what I was thinking.
That was the year when they had 4 first round draft picks, one of which came as compensation for Bill Belichick signing with the Patriots.
Fun times.
And the other two were, I think, the John Abraham trade. And so they got some guys. They got that first round class that year that they got Pennington was, and I'm going to try to do this without Googling, it was Sean Ellis, Pennington, Anthony Becht.
Decent.
And there's one. I got to Google it. God dang it. I hate myself for not remembering a 20-year-old draft.
DeBrickashaw Ferguson.
DeBrickashaw Ferguson. It's the 2000 Jets draft, yes.
He was, what, 10 at that point?
No. Sorry, it was Ellis. They did draft Abraham. That was the draft they drafted Abraham.
John Abraham.
Yes.
Atlanta Falcons legend, John Abraham.
Ferguson didn't show up for another 4 years. It was Ellis, Abraham, Pennington, and Becht. And two of those One was for a Belichick compensation, and I forget how they got the other two picks. But they drafted some guys. Sean Ellis was a perfectly good defensive end. Abraham was their best pass rusher of the last two decades.
He was also the Falcons' the best pass rusher for the last two decades.
John Abraham couldn't walk without getting the shakes at the end of his life, but he was an extremely good pass rushing DE.
Wait, what?
Penny? Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Like John Abraham suffered some serious health issues towards the end of his career.
Oh.
Yeah. But on a brighter note, Pennington was, he had a noodle arm, but he was very accurate and good at anticipating when guys would break open. He just couldn't stay healthy. He had a good year when he came back with the Dolphins for 1 year or two, but he was Randy Moss's quarterback, man. He threw all those touchdowns to Moss at Marshall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Byron Leftwich, Pennington. Very crazy run. Randy Moss, that Marshall run is pretty wild. Also, Andrew, how annoying is it that we don't get Marshall, West Virginia anymore? They just don't play at all.
You know, it's one of those rivalries that's like there's a litany of how come X doesn't play Y anymore or something like that. I mean, it's just like, it's honestly, I like the aspect of making like some I'm good with seeing every year, but then I'm some are like, you know what, if they took a year or two off, cool, like I wouldn't hate that. But I think they'll eventually play each other, because I think that there is a regional, the more conferences become less regional, I think we're going to start seeing more region-centered matchups. And I think that we do need to see some of the state's best go up against each other. Cincinnati and Ohio State, get it done.
We got Cincinnati in the Big 12 coming up.
Not hating it. And the thing is, like, people were kind of jumping on me for saying, oh, well, what about the Alliance? The Alliance doesn't even freaking matter. They basically had a meeting to have a meeting.
They didn't get anything in writing, which is the main thing. Nothing's in writing. There's no penalty for breaking up the Alliance. There's nothing.
They looked at each other and they shook hands.
It's a great way of doing business.
That's the important thing.
Bob, this is unfortunate, but we have to talk about your very online baseball team owner. What a week.
So we're going to talk about the Mets this week, huh?
Meet the Mets. Meet the Mets. Meet the Mets.
The thumbs down thing, was that this week? It feels like that was already a lifetime ago.
That was like Monday or Tuesday.
We learned that Sandy Alderson had a son in the organization who got promoted.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, smell that nepotism, baby.
Mm-hmm.
So for those who aren't been keeping track with the Mets, this week, mm-hmm. when they finally pulled a game off the tanking Washington Nationals, it has been revealed as part of their sort of, the Mets have had a lot of weird sort of hand gestures that they do to one another when they get a big hit.
Mm-hmm.
They've done it for a while. But there was a period back in 2018, I'm going to say, where they had some older players, and so they would mimic grunt using a pepper mill as if to say, look, we've got salt and pepper hair. Whatever, it's baseball. So evidently Javi Baez and Francisco Lindor, they didn't like being booed for not being able to hit, and so when they did actually get on base, they would signal thumbs down to one another, and this has been going on for a while, but no one caught it because the Mets weren't able to get on base. Then someone finally asked him about it, and instead of coming up with a half-decent line, like a lie, they openly admitted that they're mad at their fans for the booing them. And then we got like 2 days worth of the booing discourse. We had Buster Olney getting all up in his high dudgeon about whether freaking like Javi Baez had tanked his free agency value or something. Then there were some fake non-apologies. Then the owner tweeted, "I wish the only controversy was the black jerseys." Shut the fuck up! Shut up! Log off! It's not funny!
I can just tell he just... Bob's so over this team in this season, but it just seems like another wave of shit just keeps coming.
It does! And... it does! And then they, you know, won a couple of games and sort of everyone kind of let it go. They had Baez the day after the whole Boogate thing happened. Scored on a mad dash from first after a bobble double, and, you know, good. And then the GM is the passed assistant out.
GM. Assistant acting, GM. Show acting, some respect, Robert.
Acting general manager who was the former general manager who was fired amidst allegations of sexual harassment.
Oh, wait, that was him?
Dak Scott took over
for Jared Porter.
Jared Porter.
Mm-hmm. It gets better.
Was fired for amidst allegations of sexual harassment, and this came after the former manager was also named in an ongoing years-long sexual harassment investigative article, which the Mets apparently just didn't know anything about. So Zach Scott took over for Porter when Porter was shit-canned, and then he, after, and someone evidently felt it was very important to tell beat reporters that the event took place at the owner's home during some kind of charity gala, but the whole thing was over by 9 p.m. So it's definitely not the owner's fault that the general manager was asleep in his.
Remember, weren't there players there too?
Yes.
which I like how they like slipped that in there, and I'm like, okay. Great.
Acting general manager has been put on administrative leave. The entire team needs to be flushed down the toilet in a nice purgative fire. Like, it's just the Mets. People have often parsed the question of why do people say LOL Mets? And it's not because they're bad, although they often are quite bad at baseball.
Go Braves!
No team will figure out ways to achieve great heights and terrible lows, but always, always, always find some way to humiliate themselves.
To be fair, it's my favorite Mets-ism might be from former Slam Magazine editor Russ Bengston, mm-hmm. which is, God damn it, Mets. That's
he does. My favorite one. If you're a fan of like late 90s, early 2000s basketball magazines and some angry tweets about the Mets, Russ makes for an outstanding follow. It's just been completely ridiculous. And the entire team is injured in various ways. And a lot of the talent they brought, they have like the third highest payroll in the majors, but they're quite bad. It's making people pine for the Wilpons. Mm. That's how bad it's been.
Which is wild.
Yeah.
We need that story to come out with the Wilpons being at the party. That needs to be the next part of it.
Yeah, I don't think they get invited to like fancy hedge fund guys' charitable events. They're like leathery Long Island real estate magnates. They don't run in Cohen's financial circles, man. That's a different grade.
Interesting.
They have not reached that echelon.
But also,
they were not able to reach that echelon is one of the reasons why they were not qualified to own a Major League Baseball team.
Well, you as a Mets fan, like, when people do this, and we see this with the Knicks, right? Like, this is something you've dealt with.
Also a Knicks fan, by the way.
Right.
And a Jets fan. I've made some bad choices.
A new Tennessee Volunteers fan. So one positive there.
Yeah, go Vols.
See?
I don't like the uniforms. They need something to break up all that orange.
No, what? Disagree. That's a terrible take.
Oh, dude. You know what, Bob? I would advise you to go to Knoxville, Tennessee and say that.
Okay, you lost me at advise you to go to Knoxville, Tennessee, but sure.
Oh, look, the Yankee bastard.
I'm sorry. Did Bob not say last year that he wanted to go down here for a game when things cleared up? I can pull the tape.
I do want to go down there for a game. I'm just making a joke now, so...
Just shots fired, Bob. We need to have the Max Khaleesi meeting.
They had black for a couple of years. Just a little hint of black. On the.
What do you mean a couple of years? That was one game. It happened once. That was one Lane Kiffin game. That was it.
Oh, with the black unis?
Yeah, that was the Halloween night. That was it.
Not all black. No. I think he's accents.
So, Bob, perfect example. Mm. Go to 2003 Tennessee Miami. You will see the perfect Tennessee uniform with the hint of black and the road uniforms. You will be
the
happy.
White roads.
Yes. White road uniforms, 2003 Tennessee. Miami.
Is this some Casey Clawson stuff you got going on here?
Yeah, well, you know what? Hey.
Yeah, there you go. It's an outline on the numbers. That's it.
No thanks. Hard pass.
That's all they need.
Chase, to be fair, the last time y'all actually wore uniforms like that on the road, you guys were actually relevant, so.
I'm sorry. Did we not win a national title without the black accent?
No. You actually did. You won a title with them.
So, no, we didn't.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you guys wore the home uniforms that game.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tiny bit. All it does is make the orange pop a tiny little bit. It's barely noticeable. That is a better designed football uniform.
Won't stand
just,
for it.
We're the grays. I like the smoky grays.
Mm-hmm. The smoky grays are amazing. I wish they'd bring those back.
Or you could do a dark gray highlight for the Smoky Mountains and whatnot.
Well, we have smoky grays. Have you seen those, Bob?
Yeah.
They're top
Christ,
notch.
Bob, do your Googles.
Tennessee Vols smoky.
He's actually Googling it.
Of course I'm Googling it. No, those are bad. Those suck.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Another terrible take.
Gray is not a good football uniform color.
You know what? I will agree, but there are some teams that can get away with it.
Yeah, it should be. Their colors should be orange and a granite gray.
Oh, it's like anthracite? Just say the word, Bob. Sure. Ew.
Or graphene, if you prefer. I don't know, man. But there are ways to pull it off without it being Halloween colors, is what I'm saying.
Hater.
Last thing.
I'm not a hater.
And we'll...
I just have a fine arts degree. There's a difference.
The last thing, and we'll do this quickly, and we'll wrap up here today. Andrew, Tebow, first take. Stephen A. Smith. Michael Irvin.
Wait, whoa. Hold up. So you're telling me that in addition to Michael Irvin, they are getting Tim Tebow.
Yes, it's a rotating cast list to debate Stephen A. Smith.
Jesus Christ.
Wait, is you mean Kellerman, not Stephen A. Smith?
No, Kellerman's gone.
Yeah, Kellerman's going to ESPN Radio full-time, which...
Right.
So there's going to be a rotating cast against Stephen A. on first take.
It's to replace Kellerman, not
yes.
to replace Stephen A.
Okay, correct.
Fine.
Here's the thing. I don't watch First Take. You guys know my thoughts on First Take and the First Take debate culture of sports media and just sports content altogether these days. So I'm going to save you all that. I'm not watching, but I guarantee you if it's ever going to be on mute, I can still hear their loud asses.
I'm not going to
really
watch.
They're considering Tebow? They really think people will watch to watch Tebow. They might not be wrong. Actually, why am I even bringing that up? Tebow will absolutely bring in viewers. It couldn't get any sillier, so why not?
But he's also just not built for a Stephen A. Smith argument. Like, that's the... I don't... He's
too
nice
for it.
He's too laid
nice
back.
For it. And here's the thing. I'd say by November, they're going to have the other dumb Acho brother, which... I heard him last night during the intermission of – or not intermission, but the weather delay with UCF and Boise State. And I'm like, you know what? I didn't think they could actually do it, but they made another one just as bad. Awesome. Cool. Sweet. Hate everything.
Not about it. Bob, your pick of the week.
There is a delightful article that got published this morning by Alan Sepinwall, who is a TV
friend of the pod. Yeah, Rolling
reporter.
Stone.
Friend of the pod.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice pull. Alan Sepinwall, I actually years ago used to frequent the old Knickerblogger fan forums.
Did he?
And would post. Yeah, he would post there quite often. Not to out him. Sorry, Alan. But he would post on knickerblogger.net after a game.
Shout out to Mike Curlio.
And in the various chats. Mm. But so I know I actually didn't realize who he was when he was posting there. And I just knew him as this guy, Al Sepp. And years later, I was like, oh, that's who that is. Cool. Alan Sepinwall wrote, I believe it's him who wrote it. It may have been someone else. But there's a whole bunch of stories that are coming out in Rolling Stone this week about the new Sopranos movie, The Many Saints of Newark. And there is a profile of Michael Gandolfini, who is stepping into his father's shoes, literally, and playing young Tony Soprano. And it's really just, I won't spoiler any of the heart-wrenching moments, but there are a lot of them. And it's a really very touching thing. And not that I needed any more encouragement to see this movie, but for those
you're fired up.
Who might be, I'm fired up. I'm amped.
More so than high school football on a Friday night. Friday Night Lights, more so than that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Andrew Hammond, your pick of the week.
Literally this entire week in college football is back. If you want to, I'll say this, if you want to overreact, fine. But there's literally, I'd say, nothing to overreact to this weekend. Like, if Alabama doesn't win outright over Miami, don't freak out. If I don't expect Clemson and Georgia to be a blowout, if it is, I'd be
That'd
shocked,
be pretty surprising.
But, yeah, but once again, don't freak out. Yeah.
Now, I think you have a right to freak out if you're George and you get blown out by Clemson.
Honestly, I think they'll be okay because here's the thing. We've seen it before. You can either get blown out or not look good in a game and still make the playoff. Like,
for sure. But it's just a lot of pressure on that Florida game. If you look at that Georgia schedule, it's Clemson and Florida, and they're going to blow out everybody else. It's a pretty easy schedule.
You're giving Florida a little too much credit.
I mean, Florida, I picked Florida and Texas A&M to win the SEC this year.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but I'm just, if that game was in the swamp, I'd buy it, but yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I picked Georgia to win the national championship.
Oh, so. No. Oh, no. How dare you? I know. How dare you?
I know.
No, I actually picked Clemson. That's why it's funny. Before the season's done, I think DJ Uiagalelei is going to be an absolute monster, and Will Shipley's going to be great, and that defense going to be loaded. Give me the Tigers. But I am going to watch Ohio State later tonight from their game last night against Minnesota. So more film to get into.
Good game. Don't freak out too much. Like, okay. They're fine.
My pick of the week, Titletown High. Yes, the Netflix documentary on Valdosta High School, South Georgia.
Is that Rush Probst? Rush Probst?
Yes, it is.
Oh God,
Andrew, you got to binge it. You got to binge it. It's 8 episodes, 20 minutes a piece. Fantastic stuff. Delightful. There's nothing better. I love it so much. If you love Two-A-Days, you'll love Titletown.
Rush still talking about beating the piss out of everybody.
It, in different words, same meaning, same style. He hasn't changed at all. It's a wild ride, but I'm here for it, and I would watch that show every day. Never get bored of it. And also, just Rush Probst doing any type of pregame speech is just one of the more hilarious.
Oh, it fires
things.
You up. It definitely.
He
fires
says
you
nothing.
Up.
He says nothing.
It's but just words.
It's just words. It's words. It's just word vomit. He has no idea what he's talking about when he's saying it's all very generic, but it fires everybody up, and you're like, yeah. He'll walk into a locker room after a game and be like, y'all sucked. And he'll just look at people and like, you're awful. And it's incredible. These are high school kids. It's a wild ride. But in the South, the SEC, college football, high school football, just means more. Bob, we can find you on Twitter at Bob Saeta. We can follow Andrew on Twitter at @AhamFreePress. Go subscribe to the Detroit Free Press and the Daily Beast if you have not already done so. And if you have any email questions for us, please feel free to email us at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe on sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com, where I'm writing a sports column every single day. And if you like listening to us, 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, would be delightful. Guys, I will talk to you next week.
Sweet.
All right, it is Friday afternoon, so you know what that means. You know it's Rocky Top Let's Rock with my fellow Tennessee volunteers of the UTK Daily Beacon. It's Ethan Stone. Ethan, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Pretty good. 1-0, first in the SEC. People forget the Tennessee Volunteers. Also here, Ryan Schumpert of Rocky Top Insider. Ryan, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Glad to be on again. Glad to be talking about some football along the last and a win. I don't know when the last time we were discussing a win on here was, but it's been a long time.
I mean, it's been a long time. It was a while. It's been a bit. Was it Vanderbilt? Was that it? Was
that Vanderbilt? That'd have been the last win.
Oh my goodness. We had a different quarterback at that time. It wasn't even JG. It was HB. Man, that's where we should start, because I think it's interesting if you watch back the film, like the actual TV footage, versus what it was like where I was sitting and just seeing what I could see, like my angle and what Milton was seeing. Like, it was great that I was able to see what Milton was able to see. And it's funny because one of the great things about Tennessee fans is they're extremely passionate, and they will yell every thought that is coming out of, like, every thought that comes to them is coming out of their mouth in these games. And it's delightful. So there were some crazy fans behind me. And it was great, because Milton on the Cedric Tillman touchdown bomb, I have never heard of a more, no. Okay, that's fine. Like, it was so good, and it's going to be the microcosm of, like, the Joe Milton experience, where we're just going to be like, no. Okay, that's fine, I guess. Like, that's fine. He throws extremely hard. He has really good vision running the football. I thought the RPO stuff was good. I am worried about the Cooper Mays injury. I don't know if you have anything on this and what that's going to be, but him going down was rough. I don't know how much that affected things in the second, third, and fourth quarter, but Joe Milton, he came as advertised, where it's like his completion percentage, I don't think, is going to be like Harrison Bailey's 70%, but I also think he's going to take more chances downfield than Harrison ever would. I think he moves around the pocket a lot better than Harrison does. I think, obviously, more deep shots than Hendon Hooker would ever take, but there's some stuff to like, stuff not to like. Ryan, let's start with you. What do you make of Joe Milton's game last night?
Yeah, I thought he was underwhelming overall. I mean, you're right, there was some good and some bad, but man, I mean, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was that Cooper Mays injury, but something snapped there after the first quarter.
Right.
He was really solid in the first quarter. I mean, he wasn't perfect. I mean, you saw plays where, you know, he missed timing on a receiver down the field or down the middle, but he was certainly good in the first quarter. I mean, I don't think there's any way to put it besides that. And then from there, it certainly didn't have some help. He had some bad drops. Jalen Hyatt didn't have a very good game last night. But, I mean, he just had two completions the rest of the game after the first quarter. One of those was a check down, and one of those was a touchdown to Tillman you're referencing. And that play, I mean, even though he threw a touchdown, it wasn't really a good play. Yeah, Jalen Hyatt streaking right down the middle of the field.
But to be fair, I'm going to Tillman over Hyatt right now, right? Like, I'm not. He was probably tired of the Hyatt stuff. He's like, no more. You had your chances. I'm going to Tillman deep.
I guess so. And he had the running back on the check down, too.
Mm-hmm.
I call it a check down. The running back's probably 15 yards down the field with no one within 20 yards of him. That would have been the safe play. But, I mean, you mentioned Tillman. Tillman was a guy that was kind of impressive last night. He didn't fill out the stat sheet, but he made a really nice catch on that ball. And he beat his defender twice for what should have been touchdowns, and Milton overthrew him. But I guess that was my overall takeaway. Milton was very inconsistent, and him missing those throws down the field, I think, are what really cost him last night, what makes his performance last night look not very good. And then going forward, I think where he has to be a lot better.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Ethan, what do you make?
So against Bowling Green, you can kind of get away with stuff like that. I second what Ryan said, that just his decision-making at times was a little flaky, I guess. There was one instance in the third quarter. It was, I believe, 2nd and 8. He threw an incompletion to, I think, Jalen Hyatt on the far side of the field. And he had Javonte Payton wide open over the middle for a 25-yard gain. I mean, if he just sees that, you know, wide open first down, move the chains, and you're close to red zone territory.
He missed a lot of those.
He did.
He did.
I mean, the thing I noticed immediately that I was actually going to say is that check down to Jabari Small was probably a touchdown on the touchdown throw. Like, there were multiple throws that were much easier that he could have made that were just a lesser degree of difficulty that would have gotten the ball 6 points that didn't involve an underthrown really good catch by Cedric Tillman.
Yeah, it was interesting also, like, I was just keeping a mental count of targets, but it was really Velus Jones, who was hyped up so much, was not really a factor. He had one drop in this game. Was he targeted after that drop? Because, like, I don't really recall anything from Velus.
Well,
I don't really think he was.
Started over him, I believe.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, he's been seen as, like, the leader of this this group, him and Tillman, and I was just kind of surprised at his snaps and his targets in this game. I thought he would be more of a factor, especially with Hyatt just missing so much time with injury. I don't know. I was kind of surprised to see what they threw at Hyatt and what they threw at Peyton and what they threw at Tillman versus Velus. I just thought Velus would get more run.
Well, I thought he would, too, a little bit. But, I mean, he's really, you mentioned Hyatt, I mean, being injured. I mean, Jones is been dealing with more injuries in fall camp than he has, and he's just coming back, and I'm with you. I thought he played more, and really I was surprised. Tennessee really just played those four receivers.
Yeah.
They did not rotate receivers much at all, did not go deep. Obviously Jimmy Callaway was unavailable, and he's a guy I think that will be in that rotation. But I don't know if there was certain trying to limit Velus just coming back from injury. You know, obviously Pitt's game next week is going to be more critical, but I'm with you. I mean, I thought he would be too, you know, number two, number three receiver on targets, and he played just 35 snaps last night compared to 70 for Hyatt, 53 for Javonte Peyton, and Tillman was at 82. So he wasn't even in close to the ballpark that Hyatt and Tillman were. And like you said, he didn't really target him much at all either.
Tillman was great. He's filling the Josh Palmer role nicely. He was just like, with Josh Palmer's exit, Palmer just left all of his powers to Tillman, which is okay for me. I'm okay with it.
Definitely, and that's not really a receiver that Tennessee has either.
No.
If you look at their other guys, they're mostly speed guys, kind of burners. They need that physical presence, and you're right, he plays a lot like Josh Palmer. Maybe not the athleticism that Palmer has, but that size and very good at high pointing the ball.
I'm worried about next week with Milton in terms of like the fan response, because there were some people getting very annoyed at Joe Milton in this game around me. A lot of season ticket holders were getting a little uneasy. And what was like bringing it back to Milton a little bit with like what we were seeing with Jabari Small and the checkdowns, missing Hyatt over the middle, but like the fans all saw this, which is like one of the crazier things is like usually you'll get like everything's moving so quickly in Tennessee's up tempo offense, like we can get to that too, but like they were seeing it. We were all seeing it. And I was looking over and I was just like, what is he missing here? Like, we're facing the same direction and we can see the reads and we can see what's open and what they're giving him. And Milton was just missing him. And the fans were like losing it. I don't know if y'all could tell, but the fans were really yelling a lot about Milton missing these open dudes. And that was very frustrating.
Yeah, I know. Specifically, some of my friends were texting me throughout the game saying that exact same stuff. I mean, people seemed to want Milton to be much, much better than he was, like almost superhuman just this early. And you got to think, you know, it's his first game in a new system, you know, coming from Michigan. Didn't play too much last year. You know, you're going to have those growing pains.
Ethan, what did you make of his running ability? What did you make of the calls for him to run? And he obviously had the rushing touchdown, which was pretty easy scamper. Like, what did you make of his vision on running the football, taking hits? What did you make of him on that front?
Well, it seemed to be his strong suit for sure, but I feel like he could be much better at it. He didn't really run with much anger, just in my opinion. You know, he had several instances where there was one, I believe it was third and seven, maybe second and seven, he could have cut inside, but instead chose to kind of run it outside a little bit, and Jacob Warren missed his block, but that's kind of beside the point. He could have gotten that first down if he just kind of put his head down, and obviously, you know, quarterbacks aren't asked to do that too much, but he's a big guy. he should be able to you know, have that physicality to get that first down. And, you know, those just little things like that. Obviously, you know, he had the couple rushing touchdowns, and that's always a good thing to see, that he's not afraid to, you know, just tuck it and run sometimes. But I'd like to see more from him personally moving forward.
What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, and the play, I remember that play you're talking about, Ethan. I think it was the third down, because that was Tennessee went for it then on fourth and short and got stuffed. I think that was early in the third quarter. But he was about what I expected running it. I don't disagree with anything Ethan said. He certainly could, I think, be a little more effective, you know, playing with a little bit more physicality and assertion in the running game. But, you know, I didn't expect him to be a great running threat. I thought what I did expect was him to be a guy that can extend some plays, and I think for the most part he did a solid job of that last night. Now, I'll say this, he was able to stay in the pocket a lot longer than he's going to be able to moving forward, so we'll get a better feel for that going forward. And then, you know, a lot of his runs, at least design runs, were in the red zone, and I think that makes sense. He's not a super fast guy. I don't think he's a guy that really opens up the field with his legs a ton in the running game, but he's certainly a guy that's capable, and with that size and short yardage, I think he'll be able to have some success.
Well, let's talk about the running backs, because they actually equaled the same amount of rushing yards. And it was one of those, I don't know if y'all picked up on this, but it was like when you looked up top and you're like, oh, we're going to rush over 300 yards in this game, where it kind of caught me by surprise just how many yards Evans and Small had picked up as a two-headed monster against this vaunted front seven in Bowling Green. Ryan, what did you make of Teyon Evans and Jabari Small? What did you like about both? What was the difference? Obviously, the Kamara touchdown run is what it's going to stand out for me, and I'm sure a lot of fans. But what did you make of Evans' debut? Jabari Small getting the early looks in the first quarter. What did you make about both guys?
Yeah, no, that was a group I think we talked about on here that I thought had the potential to be really good without a lot of returning talent. And I thought their debut was good. I mean, Teyon Evans especially was really impressive. The touchdown run you referenced there, really good. And he had a handful of runs like that, that he had some really nice broken tackles. And he was able to get, what was it, 118 yards that they both had, 116 yards. He did it on six less carries. So I thought he was really impressive. And Jabari Small was about the guy I thought he was going to be. I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to blow to the door off anybody or really going to stand out and go, man, that guy's really good. But I think he's a really, really solid player. I think he's a really reliable runner, and I think that showed up last night. And look, I think one thing that's encouraging from Tennessee's run game last night, they averaged over 5 yards a carry, and their longest run was 21 yards. I mean, it was just consistently very, very few negative plays, if any, and then consistently at least 3 or 4 yards. Again, like you said, Chase, not playing 85 Bears out there or anything in this Bowling Green front. But at the same time, how many times have we seen in the past 10 years, Tennessee not be able to run it on bad teams early in the season? That happened plenty of times, and Tennessee was able to do it with these last night.
Ethan, what do you think?
Yeah, it was definitely a good sign. I think Evans especially was pretty dominant, especially in the third quarter, I believe. I made a note about 3 minutes in. Let's see, it said, 11:46. I just put, running backs are shining, and I think that captures it pretty well. They just, Heupel kind of moved towards a run attack only thing when Milton started to struggle a little in the second. And then he didn't really go away from it the entire rest of the game. And, if, you know, as the old saying goes, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So, you know, with Evans and Small just running it down their throats like they were, I don't see any reason for them to have switched it. And they were pretty impressive, the both of them. I think they both finished with the exact same numbers, 116 and a touchdown. If I'm not wrong, but
yeah, right.
I mean, totally opposite from Milton. They both run with anger. Like they want to run you over, and especially on Evans' 19-yard touchdown in the third, he was angry on that.
On the defensive side, Theo Jackson, 11 tackles, 6 solo, 2.5 tackles for losses, 3 pass breakups. He was everywhere. You spoke to it at the top, Ethan. What did you make of Theo's game?
So Theo Jackson, I think, was the player of the game, actually, maybe beside Evans, especially definitely on defense. He had 11 tackles, 2 tackles for loss, 1 almost interception. It was right in his hands, a little too fast for him, I guess. But, you know, as far as Jackson goes, that's pretty impressive to see from that position, especially one that Tennessee hasn't had too much success at in the past couple of years. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see just how that'll translate to next week's game against Pitt, against a better offense, you know, ones that'll give them a little bit more of a run in the secondary. And not even just Jackson. In general, the secondary tackling-wise, I think, looked very sharp. Coverage-wise, you know, there's obviously some to be desired, but they were making the tackles, the open field tackles that they needed to. Alante Taylor, there was one that he absolutely blew up a play, I think, to start the third, and it kind of gave the crowd a little bit more momentum after that 14-6 start. So it's going to be interesting to see how they can progress in being a two-dimensional threat rather than just, you know, being able to stop the run and being able to stop those outside slants and stuff.
Ryan, what do you think?
Yeah, he played really well, and he was a guy that, I mean, that was a position that I thought was going to be one of the fiercest position battles in fall camp, and he really seemed like he took the reins of it pretty quickly, and he was the guy, and he played like it last night. 2.5 tackles for loss, 3 pass breakups. He was really, really solid, and again, like Ethan said, that was a spot. Tennessee was horrible at the nickel spot last year. They rotated so many different guys there and really never found an answer, so I thought that was a really good sign for him. And one note I just have on the defense overall, defense played a lot of guys. We talked about the receiver group that didn't play a ton of guys. Defense played a lot of guys last night. The backup linebacker, Solon Page, and Aaron Beasley played, I think, just 2 less snaps than the starters did. And look, if you want to, I think, you know, obviously Bowling Green's not very good offensively. They didn't do much offensively against Tennessee. But if you want to go back and look at where they had success, they had very, very little success against Tennessee's first team defense. I mean, it was almost 3 and out every single time those guys were on the field. So I think Tennessee, again, we knew the depth of this defense was going to be really bad. The question was how, and we know the defense isn't going to be good, but how much can the defense hold its own? I think what you saw from the first team defense week one, you can't ask for much more.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think the secondary looked good. I also just, like, this was one of those where Bowling Green was really, really excited about how the first half ended, and it was 14-6. And I want to mention Heupel's clock management at the end of the first half, because I think that is something that's going to be lost from this game. People might not remember, but I was very upset and very annoyed about what was happening there. But they were talking about it, like, Scott Loeffler's offense is just all dig and ducks. They were doing play action over. I wish I could. It had the NFL sortable stats, because I want to pull that up of how many were play action rollouts for Bowling Green, but that's what Loeffler was doing, and all these 5-yard outs, and that was it. Like, they were going to have to dig and dunk their way through this Tennessee defense, and that was just not happening. Eventually, the bottom was going to come out, and it did. So, shout out to Scott Loeffler, who just continues to just put out some of the most putrid, boring offenses, no matter where he goes. Auburn, Virginia Tech, it doesn't matter. I don't care that he's Tom Brady's close friend. Just, I don't understand why this man keeps getting college football jobs. All that being said, Heupel, running the clock down. I didn't understand this. It was like, you're not playing Georgia. What are you doing here? You're running it down. Like, he burned, what, 35 seconds to the end? Like, and then just took a Hail Mary shot at the very end. But, like, what was that last drive at the end of the first half? And that was, like, one of those where, oh, no, this is not good. This needs to be nipped in the bud this week. Like, in practice this week, you cannot be doing that kind of stuff against the Floridas, the Bamas, the Georgias, like, or even Pitt next week. Ryan, what did you make of that sequence?
Yeah, well, I'll start with what I think you were getting at a minute ago, the not calling a timeout after the third down sack.
What was that?
He had on Bowling Green. I mean, that was inexcusable. I'm looking around like, I mean, what is he doing? He was standing right by the ref.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what is he doing here? I mean, I made, because, you know, you're thinking, okay, they're going to have minute 45, Joe Milton, first time, run 2-minute drill, 2 timeouts, call one. Again, they had 3 timeouts. Wasn't like they were low on timeouts. Going to be a very good test run for him. And then instead he gets a minute, and, you know, that's really where Milton had been struggling in that second quarter going into that, but one, I think it was today, 2-3 and outs. One of them, 3 and out, didn't play very good. The other 3 and out, you had the bad Jalen Hyatt drop for about 20 yards on what was 2nd and 10. So at that moment, when you weren't able to get anything going in the 2-minute drill, when you had good field position, that's when I kind of felt like the wheels were starting to fall off for Milton. But I will say, and I don't know if you were being critical of that, them running it down at the end, I thought that was smart.
Oh, no, I was being critical.
I don't know why.
No. What? No,
yeah,
it's Bowling Green.
Bowling Green didn't take a timeout. It's four. You're collapsing, first of all, if you want to look at it that way. You started 14-0 quickly, and you have fourth and six at midfield. Well, why would you run a play with 35 seconds?
Because you're trying to get a field goal.
I mean, if you... and it easily just goes back the other way against you.
Well, if that's how you're playing against Bowling Green, we got problems. If we're playing scared against Bowling Green and we're like, oh, the bottom might be coming out here, then we have problems.
I mean, I felt like that was... I mean, I get your point, but we're talking about a quarterback who completed two passes after the first quarter last night, so I don't know how there's that high level of confidence in him to pick. And look, Josh Heupel coached that way too. Let's make sure this game does not stay close against a bad team. And we saw it when he came out in the second half. They were just going to run the ball every single play. They knew Bowling Green couldn't stop it. They weren't going to fiddle around with it. I thought that was the same way. I didn't understand why Bowling Green didn't take a timeout to make Tennessee punt and not be able to throw a Hail Mary. But I do see your point. And I would almost say be more aggressive against a better team you're trying to upset. And I get that Tennessee wants the excitement of the offense playing really good in Heupel's first game. But if you don't get that fourth down and Bowling Green does get another field goal, their kicker had just hit, I think it was a 49-yard field goal to kick before, so they wouldn't have had to go very far. Then the Boo Birds are coming down. Then you get the energy in the stadium of Georgia State, here we go again.
Oh, wow. Oh, goodness. Oh, we don't have to bring Georgia State into this. We don't need any of that. Ethan, what are you most looking forward to getting cleaned up in the pick game? What are your early expectations coming out of this game that you would like to see cleaned up next week?
First and foremost, I want to see Milton do better just passing the ball, being less one-dimensional. In the first couple drives, he was really good at that. I think he went 4 for 5 to begin and then 7 for 9, both of them obviously ending in touchdowns. And you know, I saw some promise in that. I think he can be really, really good with that. Obviously, most of them were just kind of check down plays. But I'd like to see, with him looking downfield more, I want to see him hit Peyton over the middle. I want to see him hit Jabari Small in the flat for a 40-yard touchdown jaunt instead of, you know, throwing into double coverage for Cedric Tilden to make an incredible catch. I want to see more of the passer Joe Milton and less of the runner Joe Milton. And that's not necessarily because Joe Milton is a bad dual-threat quarterback. Obviously, you know, he has those intangibles, but Tyon Evans and Jabari Small should be able to hold you down on that front. And the Vols need to get some sort of passing game if they're going to compete against even Pitt and definitely the SEC-caliber defenses that are coming up later in the schedule.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And people forget that he's the same size as Cam Newton. Some people had forgotten, but I want to make it very abundantly clear on this podcast that he is the same size as Cameron Newton.
He did the Superman touchdown celebration. Did you see that?
I did.
First score.
People forget. Yeah. Cam 2.0, Heisman, here he comes.
Far too many people forget.
Did you know Alvin Kamara was a Tennessee Vol? Also, very awkward that T. Martin was not there last night for that. Because everything was great about that. I don't know if y'all picked up on it, but people were looking around at the T. Martin not being there situated. That was awkward. I don't know how they could have done that otherwise, but that was unfortunate. Because that was a great moment, but T. not being there and then talking about T. was kind of awkward. Did y'all get that from the booth?
Not really. I noticed that he wasn't there at ceremony earlier in the day. And who was it that was there representing him? That's what I couldn't figure out.
I didn't know either. I don't think they made that clear. I don't know. It was very strange.
Yeah,
we were all looking around like, what's happening here? Who is this person? Why is T not here? Like, did he decline? Was that one of those because of how last season ended and him being in Baltimore? Did he decline?
Nah. I mean, I don't know. I imagine that he's just using he has work in Baltimore as a cover not to come. Now, I don't know if it's because of how last year ended he feels sour or anything like that. I don't think so. I mean, he released a statement when they announced they were doing it, you know, being very thankful. But I'm with you. I mean, it did feel a little odd, even though that he's with the Ravens, that he didn't come. It's not like Baltimore's playing this weekend, even in a preseason game.
Right. Ryan, what are you looking for to get cleaned up after this game, what you saw, what are you most looking for against Pitt next week?
Yeah, I'm with Ethan, number one, just on the passing game. How much can they clean up on the passing attack? And And I'll be interested to see what does the run blocking look like next week. And it continued to be pretty solid. Is Tennessee going to be able to run the ball on the South Carolina, the Missouris, the Kentuckys of the world? You know, I don't think they're going to be able to do it against the Georgia and Alabamas. But if they can do it against those guys, I think you're all of a sudden asking Joe a lot less out of Joe Milton. And having offensive success is going to be a lot more sustainable. And on the defense side, I'll be really interested to see what the rotation looks like next week. Like I said a minute ago, the front seven, they play a ton of guys, pretty much basically evenly split between first and second teams. So I wouldn't expect that to be the same next week, especially at linebacker. But I'll be interested to see how those snaps get allocated. And a defensive back, too, because George got a lot of snaps, and he didn't play great last night.
I'm most curious about the running game. Are they able to do this again against a better defensive front in Pitt? We'll get into the preview next week, but that is what I'm most looking forward to, because Teyon Evans looks like the real deal, and I think he might be a dude. It's going to become part of the norm, and it's not going to be a surprise sooner than later. And also, I'm concerned about Cooper Mays. Heupel said he expects to have him back next week, but that looked bad, and he kept playing for a little bit. Like, he did, I think he still played for like two more plays, where I looked at my girlfriend, I was like, why is he still out there? Like, he can barely move. What are we doing? Why has he not been pulled yet? And he finally gets pulled after two more plays in the field. I didn't like that. I don't know why he was still out there, because he was visibly hurt, and it was one of those where I was like, why is he out there? Yes. So I don't know what was going on there, but that was not the best of looks either. But we'll see if he's back, and, you know, if this offensive line can handle this up-tempo style, because that's the other thing. These are big dudes, and we were moving. The tempo was pretty wild in the first quarter, so we'll see if that continues on against Pitt, who very much does not want to play that way with Pat Narduzzi. Guys, what can we check out from you this week? Ryan, Rocky Top Insider, Smokies Baseball, saw the development just got more expensive in my neck of the woods in Old City, $9.5 million more or something. They're not really all that concerned, the Smokies owner. He's like, yeah, that's fine. It's not a big deal. What can we check out from you and the good folks at Rocky Top Insider?
Yeah, we'll have plenty of stuff recapping the Bowling Green game. I'll have some Pro Football Focus grades out later today. We'll have everything get you ready for Pitt next week, and then a little plug as well, Pro Football Focus tied in. Elijah Simmons was the Vols' highest graded player last night that played at least 30%
Interesting.
Offensive snaps. Elijah Simmons made his first start this week. I had a feature on him in Rocky Top Insider last week, so go give that a read on the Junkyard Dog, and a fan favorite is starting to make a bigger impact on the field.
That's wild, and he was like the big surprise, even getting a start. He had a really rough spring and summer and fall camp, so him pulling that off is pretty cool. What can we check out from you, Ethan, in the UTK Daily Beacon?
Yes, so we had a game recap that went up last night, early hours in the morning. I also just finished up my notebook, just some takeaways from the game, and then obviously we're going to have a preview, some keys and predictions for next week's game against Pitt.
All right, go check that out. Go get your copy on campus. It's around there. If you're walking around campus, if you're driving around and you're looking for something to do as you can't find a parking spot over the course of an hour, get through the Daily Beacon. Read some Rocky Top Insider. I promise you'll have time finding a space. So just make sure you have that ready to go. But there you go, guys. Thank you so much for making the time. Per usual, I will talk to you next week.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.